Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. On this show, I interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are shaping and many times changing the overall sports industry. Today, we have a really special guest. I am super excited about this one. We're going to talk about business and leadership and sports with Steve Rosenberg, principal of GSD and the author of Make Bold Things Happen, Inspirational Stories from Sports, Business, and Life. Steve, welcome to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Wayne, thanks for having me. I'm super honored to be here.
I am so excited to have this conversation because I'll tell all our listeners and viewers out there, not only are you an author, you've been an executive at so many, a lot of places, but I want to also say that, you know, I love calling you a friend, and that's where it's really excited to have you on this show.
Couldn't agree more. It's an honor for me to use that term as well.
Well, Steve, you know, you're now an author. Make Bold Things Happen. Let's start at that place and talk about why did you write this book and what's it all about?
So interesting, Wayne. It's about something that you know a thing or two about. It's about networking and the importance of networking and why having a network is so important. And I was running a pretty big not-for-profit and I left and I found myself with some time. And last year I sat down with this idea because I've been called a serial networker in my life. And I'm proud, like I have almost 10,000 contacts in my phone. And it's something that I've prided myself in doing for really my entire life. And I realized that young people today don't understand how to build a network, how to walk into a room and talk to people. And networking is a two-way street, right? It's not what can everybody do for you, but oftentimes, and you're the master of this, and I've tried to be, of how can you help other people, right? And then you have a group of people that you've done things for that maybe someday will want to help you as well. So I realized that we lost a generation of people, young people, because they've had their heads buried in their phones or in TV or, you know, in what I refer to as anti-social media. And so I said, let me tell some stories because I started my career in sports and I went through entertainment and then through not-for-profit. So not just stories from my life, but I interviewed a half a dozen people who use networking to overcome what I would call hardship in their life. And some of them are based in sports. A guy by the name of Tamir Goodman, who you know, and a boxing trainer and an AAU coach, all people who face real adversity in their life, but use their network to overcome and to achieve real success in their life. So this is about networking and the power of being the person that can solve any problem at any time and why that's so important in life.
Well, Steve, I one of the things I saw, you know, and read in your book is this, you know, you have all these secrets in there, you know, and I know that I don't want to give away all the secrets so everyone has a chance to go make sure they read Make Bold Things Happen. But what are some of those secrets or a couple of things that or maybe a story that you can share with our audience?
The number one secret to me, and again, I'm talking to the master here, is show up, be present, right? And life is a participatory sport. And as far as I know, we only get one trip around the sun. And to me, it's a lot more enjoyable. Look, as a young person, I grew up with my grandparents. My mom died at a young age and we did not have great wealth and the ability to travel or do anything. So for me, I collected people and their stories, and their stories became my adventure and my opportunity to see the world. Somebody traveled, I wanted to hear about where they went. Somebody, you know, participated in an activity, I wanted to learn about it. And that is like the greatest thing that I still want to do. When I meet somebody, I want to hear their story. How did that person and me end up in the same place at the same time, at the same minute? And like, how did our journeys get here, right? So I literally, as you know, grew up in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And I talk about Mr. Rogers a lot. At this point in my life, it's scary that I'm still talking about Mr. Rogers, but I grew up less than a mile from his home. And that guy used probably the greatest disruptive media ever in television to tell us stories and to teach us things that were so ahead of the time. But the number one thing that he talked about was be kind and be nice. And I know that that 76 philosophy is doing business with nice, kind people. And that's what I've always tried to do, is if you can't be nice and you can't be kind and you can't be respectful to other people, then I don't know how you can live your life, because those are the really, that's the secret sauce, is just be nice and be neighborly, walk down the street, say hello, say thank you, say please. And to me, those aren't real secrets, but those things have gotten away from us in life. And you don't see that, whether it's sports, whether it's entertainment, whether it's whatever it is, nobody does those things anymore.
Such important points and such, you know, such positivity, and just love that, you know, so much, Steve. And, you know, like you mentioned Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and let's go there. Let's talk about your story and, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, and, you know, share with our everybody kind of that story and how you've been able to get to where you are today.
Yeah. So like I said, I grew up in Squirrel Hill with my grandparents, and how I ended up in Philadelphia on this side of the state, who even knows, but that's an interesting story. And sports was part of my life. Now, today, as I go around talking, I say, you know, sports is the opiate of the masses, right? We watch it, we talk about it, we wager on it, we consume it, we read it, we rewatch it. But back then, sports was a very different thing. For me, I was a giant as a kid, right? Like, I haven't grown, I think, since I was 13 years old. And so I was big. I played basketball. I played baseball. But we grew up when sports was far less organized. We all got together and we would play touch football or tackle football or wiffle ball or baseball. But everything was a contest, and everything we won or we lost, we learned how to win and we learned how to lose. We learned that success, failure was part of success, right? You can't win if you don't know how to lose. We learned all these valuable lessons, but I was never a minute away from something sports oriented, right? I woke up in the morning and I studied the box scores, and numbers meant something to me, right? If you gave me a number, I could tell you that was Ty Cobb's lifetime batting average, or, oh, that's how many home runs Steve Garvey had last year. Now, I grew up a Pirate fan, a Steeler fan, and a Penguin fan. And ironically, behind me, I have the Eagles Super Bowl parade painting, which my Steeler fans will back home will, you know, yell at me for. But, you know, you grow up in a town, those are your teams. And I was fortunate to grow up at a time when, right, the Pittsburgh Steelers of Mean Joe Green and Terry Bradshaw and Lynn Swan, a dear family friend, they were superheroes, right? And the Pirates, who are the worst friend, you know, team on performing in baseball, although they're a wonderful team in what they do in terms of their community outreach and everything else, but they haven't had a winner on the field in a number of years. But back in the 70s, oh my God, that was the best team in baseball, right? So I will always root for the Pirates. The P stands for a lot more for me. But I knew I was going to work in sports. And I ended up going and I got a sports administration degree at a time when there were only two universities in the country that had undergraduate programs. And one of them happened to be in Pittsburgh at Robert Morris. The other was at a small college in Miami called, at the time, Biscayne College. It's now St. Thomas University. But they had monks as RAs, and that didn't seem like it was going to be a very fun college experience. So I ended up at a place that you know about called University of Maryland, and I designed my own major and was one of the first thousand people, who knows, that had a sports administration undergrad.
You know, I can't believe it's been like 8 minutes or so into this podcast and, you know, show, and this is the first time we're talking about the University of Maryland, you know, so I may have to just redo, you know, the whole intro here just to start, you know, Maryland alum. I mean, like, that's probably as important as everything else, but, you know, your book's pretty important and you're a good guy, so you're going to keep all the other things, talk about your time at Maryland. I mean, there's some really exciting things happening at Maryland these days, certainly, yep. You know, as they're, you know, the football team's coming back, the basketball team's really making a run. I mean, you got Loxley and Willard. I mean, there's real excitement there. My son's there, so it's even more exciting. But I mean, at the same time, you know, you have, you know, all the you know, excitement at the school, and then you have this you know, there's excitement of around sports on a national and global scale right now. Like, so much is happening.
It was, look, when I got my degree, right, ESPN was only like 8 years old at the time. And you could never, I'm sorry, you know, I couldn't have projected that this ever would have happened, right? It's like, what's that great Yogi Berra quote? You know, predictions are difficult, particularly when they involve the future, right? And so I don't think anybody could have ever thought about this with sports gaming and sports gambling and AI and AR and the convergence of NFTs, right? It was just enough to collect cards, physical cards. Now with NFTs and the blockchain and the explosion of women's sports, right? You saw that the women's NCAA Iowa game outdrew the NBA on TV, the highest rated NBA game this year. So don't sleep on women's sports. So you could not have projected that. So my first job, I actually left school full time. And although I graduated on time, I started working for the then Washington Bullets and in the marketing department. And in Wayne, I was making no money. But as you know, back then, I would have paid them for the opportunity to work in sports. And today, when you look at what's going on in sports, like I said, with NFTs, with the NIL, college alone, right? All of a sudden now you have, again, guys who are going to play 4 years, the transfer portal, how that has elevated the game back, the collegiate game again. And young folks with their ability to make money with NIL deals has really, in my opinion, changed the game so much for the better. Now, there's still some kinks to iron out, and the NCAA has legislation to figure out and that sort of thing, but it's way better and way bigger than it ever was. And we're not even at the, I'm not even sure, we're still clearly at the beginning, right? The gambling thing, what did sports gambling have, about $80 billion this past year and projected to grow to like $180 billion by 2030? This was like when I was in college, you got a little sheet from a guy on a corner, you filled it out, you had to hide and hand him a couple of dollars and hope that he paid you. And now, you know, if you have a phone, you are literally in a sports book.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. I mean, going back to those Bullets days, you know, working there, you know, who was the coach at the time and who was some players?
Gene Shue, when I got hired, who was maybe one of the nicest guys I ever met, but ultimately it was Kevin Lockery for the bulk of the time. And part of my responsibility, believe it or not, was helping. I was not the main handler by any stretch, but part of my responsibility was helping to Americanize a 7'7" Sudanese basketball player by the name of Manute Bol. And I remember one day going in and my boss, who was a like to yell all the time, and I walk in, he goes, "Rosenberg." I'm like, "Yeah, come in." He says, "You got to take Manute someplace." I'm like, "All right, no problem. What am I driving?" He says, "Don't you have a car? How do you get here every day?" I'm like, "Driving a Toyota Tercel. I barely fit in it. I'm 5'10. Guy's 7'7". And he just looks at me and says, I won't say exactly what he said, but it was figure the out. So I said, "Manute, come on." We go to my car and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him. And this is a hatchback, a small Toyota hatchback. So I put him in the back seat. We put the front seat down. We throw his legs over the front seat and I fit him in. I'm driving down the beltway. I'm looking to my right. All I see are knees. He's in the back. He's not talking to me. I'm not talking to him. There's no radio. There's no social media. I would have been trending at that time, but I get him there. I get him back. He never wanted to see me again after that, to be perfectly honest with you. But those were some of the most fun days ever. The NBA was a very different game in the late 80s. By then, the Bullets were only a few years removed from winning the NBA title with Big E and Wes Unseld. But the NBA was not this global empire that it was in 1985 and 86. But I loved it. I thought for sure I was on a trajectory to be the NBA commissioner. I was certain that that was going to be my destiny. Fast forward, I'm not. I don't think I'm on that trajectory anymore.
Well, Steve, you never know with your attitude and your passion, you never know where things will go. But I got to ask you, I mean, so you're with Manute Bol. Were you the one? I mean, he didn't want to see you that much after that car ride, but did you kind of get him into starting shooting threes?
No. I was not. He was just such a wonderful guy and such a charismatic guy. And when he ended up with the Sixers, like we sort of reconnected and I would see him at games and he would give me a hug here and there. But shockingly, Wayne, I don't have one picture of Manute and I together. I think there's one somewhere buried in like an attic someplace, but it's just not, wasn't the kind of thing that you did when you're an employee there. You don't run around and take pictures, right, with the players. And although my biggest keepsake is I do have a Wes Unseld warm-up that I have hidden someplace that I don't let my kids know about. And that's a real treasure to me because Wes was the GM at the time. And I don't know, I think I won it at a employee auction. But those days with the Bullets were, you know, and Abe Pollin was the owner at that time. And those are days, I would go back to those days tomorrow. It was just so, as a young person that dreamt about working in sports. Now here I am at Capital Center working for the Bullets. I didn't miss a game. It was a dream come true. Every day I'd be sitting on the floor doing stats or doing whatever for whatever national announcer came in. It was like I have chills now just thinking about those times. It was so incredible.
Well, it's amazing. What an amazing experience. And you took all those experiences and all the things that you learned, you know, to get involved in so many other things across, you know, in the community, whether that was in the Jewish community, whether that was in the sports world, all the different things that you've done. You know, is there one thing? I mean, you're on the board of Hall of Fames. You've started youth programs and you know, in with basketball, and you've done so many different things. Is there something that really stands out for you across all these different things? The Maccabi games, your son playing in the Maccabi games, playing for Team Israel. I mean, all those things. I mean, is there something that is really an exciting moment that you look back to right at this point?
That's a great question. I would actually say just having this dream. Like I said, I was going to work in sports. And then truly my first day showing up to the Capital Center, and then my first day showing up to the Spectrum when I ended up at Spectacor working for the Flyers and that organization, those 2 days independent of each other were to me days that I will forever remember. And I've done a lot of things. So I worked with Bruce McNall's company when we were doing the marketing. If you remember back in the 90s, the NHL was playing neutral site games, regular season neutral site games to try to stimulate fan engagement and experience. So like the Penguins would play Detroit and Cleveland, right? And that sort of thing. And I was responsible for the game day marketing for those events. And I've done celebrity all-star hockey. I've done hockey legends. I've done some really big events, you know, but those two singular days when I walked into both Cap Center and the Spectrum for the first time, to me was like, I don't know, they're very special days that I actually was able to achieve a goal that I had. And it trumps anything, any individual accomplishment that I've had, you know, professionally, really.
You know, you talk about the two organizations that you worked for. I mean, the Bullets, now the Wizards, and the Flyers. I mean, both were led by legends, right? Legends. Larger than life people, Abe Pollin, Ed Snyder. Talk about, you know, your interactions with them, seeing them, you know, how they handled themselves, how they really led as leaders of unbelievable businesses and all the things.
Total leaders. Yep. Both mensches, you know, Jewish term mensch, both mensches. I had very little interaction with Abe Pollin. I was a proverbial pimple on the elephant's behind. I saw him. He would say hello to everybody, whether he knew you or not. He was very personable and outgoing and was happy that you were there. But my interactions with him were zero. My Ed Snyder story, however, is great. So I'm a 23-year-old young guy, and I'm at my first ever, maybe even 22, who knows, my first ever Spectacor Christmas party at the Adams Mark Hotel, then on City Avenue. Now I think it's a Target. And I'm sitting with my department, and Mr. Snyder, that's what we called him, walks in, and he's standing at a bar to my left by himself. And I get up and I button my suit jacket and I get up and everybody's like, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go say hello to Mr. Snyder and thank him for the party. He's like, you're not allowed to talk to him. I'm like, I'm going to go talk to Mr. Snyder, a University of Maryland graduate. So I get up, I walk over, and he literally standing at the bar by himself. He's like, hi, Mr. Snyder. My name's Steve Rosenberg, University of Maryland, 1987. Just want to thank you for this beautiful party, for employing me. Really appreciate it. And he stood there and talked to me for 10 minutes. And he said, Steve, thank you for coming over. I don't know why people don't talk to me at these parties. And we made some jokes about that. And I will tell you that for the next number of years, every time he walked into the Spectrum, I would always make sure that I was near the front because you always knew when he was coming in. And he shook my hand. He said, hello, Steve. Thank me. And I wouldn't say that we were friends by any stretch, but then as I got more involved in community events after I left Spectacor, I would see him at functions and events, and the guy never, ever, ever forgot my name. He never forgot our first meeting, and that is a guy I'm friendly with most of his kids, and that guy made more of an impression on me that day, talking to little old me, than pretty much anybody really ever in sports, and he never forgot me. And I've never forgotten that he didn't forget me. And his loss to me really is a one that this city still hasn't gotten over. The franchise certainly still hasn't gotten over. And we miss that guy as a city for sure.
Yeah, it's really amazing. You know, he was one of the first giants in sports where, you know, many people talk about coming to the world of sports as an owner after they did something else. He did it the other way. Yeah. He built his fortune. He built his family and his life in sports. And that's something that's really amazing. And now, you know, it's with seeing all of the private equity guys and real estate tycoons and really big business people and corporations, you know, coming into the world of sports today. But Ed was always the guy who built it from the ground up.
He was way ahead of his time in so many areas. And I would love to see what his reaction would be now around things like AI and AR and NFTs and sports gambling. Like somehow something tells me that he would have been at the forefront of all of it and figuring out how to leverage it all and how to have the Flyers in the center of it all is figuring out revenue streams and making the franchise even more valuable than it is, because he was, you're right, he did it the old-fashioned way, so to speak, but that guy was a shrewd and sharp businessman, but who also cared greatly about not only his employees, but about the community as a whole. But he was, man, oh man, he was from another era, and we don't have a lot of folks like that anymore.
You know, Steve, you know, this has really been awesome having you on our show and talking about your book, Make Bold Things Happen, all your things across your career. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, you've been a leader of a number of different organizations. You've gotten a chance to work with and for some of the, you know, major, you know, leaders across the sports and business world. What are some of the things that you've picked up from them that are the types of things that you now, you know, help others with?
So one, if, as a leader, right, you have to be there, right? You have to be present. You have to really care, and you have to be there. I keep saying that for your people, and, you know, give them all the credit, take all the blame, show them a clear vision and help them get there. To me, I want to find people that have high integrity and really care, but hire good people. I know this is an old adage, hire good people and let them do their work, but be there to make sure that they don't fail. People want to know that you trust them, that you respect them, and that you want them to succeed. And I think about some of the great people that I've worked for and with, and in our community here in Philadelphia, there's some really great business leaders that I've been able to know and see. You know, we lost another great one, Ed Snyder's number two, and Fred Schaebel not long ago. Although he was a Duke guy, Maryland guy, still give credit where credit is due. And Fred was a guy I learned an immense number of business lessons from. I watched the way Fred carried himself. I watched the way he treated people. And it, listen, this is the 76 Capital mantra, right? It's, again, be nice, be kind, be respectful. And as a leader, when you can articulate a good, clear vision, care about your people, but also do it in a kind and respectful and nice way, and a fun way even maybe, I think you're going to go really far. And look, I don't have the secret sauce. I don't have the secret recipe. I always wanted to be a very authentic person and lead as a role model. I wanted people to look at me and say, huh, that guy you know, cares, and he has a certain authenticity to him, and we're going to follow him. And those are the people that I've always gravitated to, and I've always tried to hire people that I want to take my job, right? As a boss, you've got to be willing to hire people that are smarter than you, who are going to ultimately take your job. And if you're good enough, you'll go get something else to do. But don't be afraid to hire people that are smarter than you. That's the way that we're all going to succeed, in my opinion. And so many leaders today don't want to do that. And they lead from an emotion of fear, or I'm the boss and this is the way it's going to be. And by the way, once in a while, you're the boss and that's the way it's going to be. I understand that. But if that's mixed in just a little bit with all the other things that I just mentioned, I think that's really what succeeds. And show them the way. And, you know, when you think about sports, there's think about some of the great coaches like Herb Brooks from the 80 Olympic team, which I talk about in the book, or a guy like, you know, Bill Russell as a player coach of that Celtics team in the late 60s. Or you think about some of the guys that we have around today. You look at a guy like, you know, Charlie Manuel, who, you know, the Phillies fans will remember forever. I mean, that guy had a very quiet way about him, was an incredible leader. And there's so many great leaders out there. And sports to me is the best way to help shape leaders. Like, to me, every young person should play sports. Either play sports, military, those are the two best ways that you learn how to handle yourself in tough situations, my opinion.
Well, look, in the world of sports, we learn things about, you know, being very passionate about what you're doing, having that desire, that drive, that being to be resilient, be able to sort of pick yourself back up and after getting knocked down. And, you know, one of the big things that we talk about at 76 Capital with a lot of our entrepreneurs that we invest in and the executive teams, we talk about all these traits. And so interesting when we bring together athletes or coaches and they talk about those traits and how important it is, whether that's on the field, whether that's on the court. I'll say the pitch. That's just for Chad because he loves when I say the pitch for the soccer side of the world. But you know, he'll be so happy that I said that, Steve. But I mean, the thing is that these traits are the same kind of traits that you need to have to be successful in business. And one of the things I you know read in your book is when you talk about when you hear no. You know, what happens? What happens, you know, what in Steve Rosenberg's mind, when you hear that word, no, what happens?
What's the word? I'm unfamiliar with that word you just said. No, what is that? No is just an opportunity to figure out another way to get to yes, right? If no one's knocking at your door, build another door. You have to figure out in a nice way to figure out how to get to yes. No is just a stumble. Everybody says no. Nope, don't want to do it. Don't want to buy. Don't want to do this. But successful people figure out how to get to yes. I think there's a book called Getting to Yes or something like that, right? And there's ways to do it. And to me, it's about having a network of people. You want to get something done. Somebody says no, or look on your phone, or who can help me get to yes? And there is no no. There can't be a no. When someone says no, that's when you roll up your sleeves and figure, all right, now the work begins. Because if it was always yes, you wouldn't need people like you or people like me or people that know how to grind and really make bold things happen. And to me, everybody can make bold things happen. That doesn't mean curing cancer or going to the moon. It means getting up and participating in life and showing up. But I love no, because no is let's go. No to me means let's go. Let that now the game is on.
I love that. I love that.
I mean, what if you know, look, how many times was no said to Herb Brooks, right? And think about that whole 1980 experience of that U.S. Olympic men's hockey team. And no, they win the gold medal. And what will never be surpassed is the greatest sports moment in history when you factor in everything else. Can never be surpassed, in my opinion, ever. And if that guy accepted no, they don't even make it into the Olympics. They're sitting on the sidelines somewhere. They lose in their first game, and maybe they don't even qualify. But that guy, with his dogged determination, respectful, got to yes in the ultimate way.
Amazing. An amazing story. And people have to read your book to see the whole thing. And Steve, this has been awesome having you on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. And before we wrap up, I have one last question or one last thing I wanted to talk about. I think that, you know, a lot of people say it's so important to have a few contacts that you have a really, really deep relationship with. But I heard you say earlier about having a really big Rolodex with lots of names, with hopefully lots of deep relationships, but a lot more than just a couple. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Every Sunday, Wayne, I make a list of 100 people that I'm already contacted with that I'm going to reach out to for the coming week. And it can't be 100 people that I spoke to the week before or the week before. And that could be happy birthday. It could be here's an article I thought you could see. It could be a phone call, a meeting, a lunch. And if they call me, it doesn't count. If I run into them on the street, it doesn't count. And I would challenge anybody to A, make a list of 100 people that you're going to reach out to, but B, actually reach out to all 100. And it has to be by Friday at 5 o'clock. Now, here we are, you know, getting close to that time today. And I'm well past the 100, because if you just to have contacts in your phone isn't enough. You've got to be sharp and keep those contacts sharp, because you don't know at any point who you're going to need. But again, more importantly, who's going to need you? Because me, like you, my greatest thing that I could do in life is put two people together and watch great things happen. That's my greatest gift. And then someday, maybe somebody will want to do something nice for me, but I don't want these contacts necessarily to help me. I want them so that I can help other people. I know it sounds corny and utopian, but that's how I live my life. At some point, someday, somebody will do something nice for me. But if you can do something nice for two people, that's the best gift you can have. Give.
Well, Steve, this has been awesome. So great to have you on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. Everyone's got to go out there and make sure you get Steve's book, Make Bold Things Happen, Inspirational Stories from Sports, Business, and Life. Steve, thank you so much for joining us on our show.
Thank you, Wayne. Go Terps.
Absolutely. Go out there and just make stuff happen. That's what Steve's all about. That's what we're all about at 76 Capital. But that's what life is all about. Go out there and make things happen, and it will. Things will happen for you. Again, have a great day. Thanks, Steve.
You too. Thank you.